So, could you give us your name and your title?
Jesse Van Gogh. So far, we've talked to cast you, so we discussed the meeting in general. But now we want to go into detail on how since the 1991, all can just be used as
So, Lima is telling us that he did a lot of work with, I guess, feminism and race issues, that kind of thing.
Yeah, my own political work has been
not surprising.
Do you think that the U.S. public is decently well informed about these kind of issues?
Requires a well-running propaganda machine and mass media support.
But they're really not given credibility in one thing.
The news treats its own errors as singular exceptions. They can do this because the public already receives them.
Videotape of people with signs chanting.
They can do this because the public already
receives them.
This self-fulfilling conception allows media outlets to present a modified version of reality. But if their goal is to inform the public, why would they miss
it?
University of Texas professor of journalism.
No shortage of information in the United States.
According to Denton, a major problem with the problem is the commercial influence. Almost everything we call media is
global
corporation. The number of companies that own news services is getting smaller all the time. And the companies that are media are getting smaller.
For small minority
it's all media companies with assets over $1 billion.
What is the actual problem now?
The Democratic Election Leader of Guatemala
is complex.
All the information we receive comes from the CIA operation.
There's been a lot of good work on
that. For example, newspaper owners use advertising dollars, corporate sponsorships, to lower the cost of the product to price versus consumers. The market then becomes a direct source of
profit. It's not so much on the severity of the atrocities or the horror of it, but but the relationship of the people committing the atrocities.
No, I read it
wrong. I was going to say that, well, you have these official sources of news, and journalists always like to give opposing viewpoints. So where do these opposing viewpoints actually come from?
Well, here, the current war in Iraq,
the market then becomes
the genocide possible. So not surprisingly, as many people have pointed out,
the market share then becomes not a direct source.
The American media to overlook that particular
When Iraq invaded Kuwait, internal opposition hindered President Bush's plan for armed intervention, rights to gain public support. In January 1991, he relayed an Amnesty International story that Iraqi soldiers allowed babies to die in Kuwaiti hospitals so their incubators could be delivered to Baghdad. The story could not be corroborated, as the only evidence was held by a little-known human rights group in Washington,
D.C. So this is a classic example where there's a debate set up in the media.
This group, the Human Rights Foundation, was housed in the offices of Hill & Nolde, the largest public relations firm in the world at the time,
and directly
In fact, she was the daughter of Kuwait's ambassador to the U.S.
Edward Herman
the firm called this film a video news release and sent it to the major media outlets, who aired it without revealing that it was a dramatization produced by a private corporation.
Chomsky concludes
the entire event inspired a popular American film called Wag the Dog that had a similar plot. But why did so many organizations, including established human rights groups such as Amnesty International, accept it as true without any actual evidence? Nobody could answer this question for sure. But the incident demonstrates the power of large public relations. The story may have been accepted.
Because this is a unique problem in the United States, or is it the same thing in other countries as well?
Well, I think to the degree that we professionalized press that's controlled by large corporations exists in any country as a problem. So, you know, Western Europe, England, Australia, you see some of the same trends. The difference here, this is the third thing I wanted to mention about the reason I think Americans are so systematically undereducated about ideology, is the peculiar American ideology, or what I usually call American obsessionalism, this notion that, you know, America is somehow outside of the usual historical forces. If we go to war, it's because we're a noble nation trying to do good. You know, this ideological construction of the United States as sort of the ultimate defender of freedom and democracy, well, if you look at the record of the United
States, in its summer 2002 issue, that the
best of the simplification of the United States. But that ideology is so deeply set in America's taught in our schools, and tried to block its college curriculum. And not surprisingly, the journalists follow up with that
quality research and, you know, take in all of that,
tend to reflect those values and those ideologies. So it's a peculiar phenomenon in the United States, partly because of that ideology, partly because America is
although he was
the greatest power in the world, it is the empire.
Carefully distinguished,
you know, the rest of the world usually has a more critical view of the empire than the empire has itself. So that also affects the quality of the news that comes from outside the U.S. It, not surprisingly, is able to
the critical focus on the U.S. much more and refuse to address
In fact, there are a lot of people in the United States who go to international sources for their news. Do you think this is for this reason, that they feel that they're getting a better informed story?
Sure, undoubtedly true. I mean,
other members, such as Salinas, support Amnesty's position as an independent human rights observer, but fear that it's influenced too much by outside pressures, the same as any large media outlet.
During broadcasts, no to avoid the SEC's ban on commercial advertising. But the effect is largely the same, since they often include corporate slogans or images. In some cases, such as with children's programs, the effect may be worse, as these company acknowledgments may imply educational benefits. Interactive films and television programs, sponsors strategically place their products on the viewer's site or similar site. Tobacco companies use this kind of product placement heavily to compensate for advertising bans. Even seemingly objective news programs are not immune to the biases in favor of sponsors. In 1990, Marquette University Communications Professor conducted a survey of he found that most students frequently admitted at
in this case, the press did eventually do it, but the office story had done all the damage.
He found that most journalists frequently admitted advertising
just comes from one of the questions. Before about Iraq, I was thinking about the way that it's presented to people, like you were saying, but there's not really a debate. It's basically two forces that are in favor of war debating kind of the details of it. And I mean, we see this as like kind of foster support for war, and you could look at it that way. But we see other situations that could have been considered very similar, but are viewed very differently. In Indonesia, for example, maybe they did a lot of the same things that Iraq did. But we don't see any kind of push for military intervention there. South Africa, which was like a long time ago, I don't remember, because kind of young at the time. You know, South Africa, Angola and Namibia, I mean, the U.S. didn't really get involved there either.
Yeah, I think that's true. A number of
while U.S. occupation of Panama was labeled liberation. Panama's Human Rights Commission confirmed that U.S. intervention did not improve living conditions for the impoverished people. Instead, U.S. protection allowed Panama's puppet leadership to retain control over a region, which, coincidentally, was important to U.S. business. After the U.S. lost control of the Panama Canal region, interest in neighboring Colombia increased. This time, U.S. military intervention was labeled a war on drugs, or a war on terror, even though their budget for operations explicitly protects oil production and an oil pipeline.
The Colombian Air Force bombed a home and said that it was a rebel base or some usual cover story like that. And in this particular incident,
Iraq was about to be the trial of the Skymaster, similarly, coverage. But they provided
technology and the targeting information
in Iraq at that time.
Airport.
Of course, that changed when Iraq fired
the
actual
enemy
bomb because it invaded Kuwait and
economic interests in Colombia.
Like that. Well, you know, this has played out over and over again.
To the
even
Senate,
in one
the
country
United States certified Colombia's compliance with human rights provisions, despite its severe human rights crisis, making it eligible
so Panama,
for U.S. military aid.
You know, Manuel Noriega was a great friend of the United
military
States, the CIA asset. There wasn't a lot of coverage of the problem
Iraq
in Panama
again.
Until
well,
the United States decided they were going to invade Panama.
The media has consistently supported U.S. actions against
Hitler
by other forgotten U.S. errors and not reporting on them at all. For example,
and the media
the press
tends to follow along. Again,
leadership
it's,
for
it's part of that,
weapon
that combination of the ideology
claimed
the
that U.S.
States
representatives were not allowed within the country as their actual intelligence agents.
As journalists, and the reliance on official sources,
Iraqi
the way in which the State Department
as the
U.S.
representatives were uncovered,
kind of set the agenda,
and the United Nations suffered significant credibility damage. However, the American press quickly forgot the story and never mentioned it again, even when the issue of weapons inspections resurfaced recently. The media does repeatedly report on past Iraqi scandals, though. Even though the news does appear to present opposing viewpoints on these issues, the debate is limited to a narrow range.
And people understand, because and that's the way the system works, not through overt repression, not through some totalitarian machinery, but the everyday workings of the system of rewards and punishments and ideology, and it sort of takes it for granted. And the result is, though, that the United States Congress does not get the range of opinions, not get the independent sources of information it needs for people to be really fully functioning citizens of democracy.
They give us a lot of information. If I can squeeze in just one more question, you talked about the U.S. and Panama. This is a very interesting analogy about Indonesia invading East Timor and Iraq invading Kuwait. But really, I mean, you could say the U.S. invaded Panama. But that's not how people here see that.
For another example,
several U.S. sanctions against Cuba, the government sanctions by
virtually the entire world community for it, and there would have been a Security Council resolution denouncing the United States for that, if
the U.S.
not for the automatic United States veto of any such resolution in the Security Council. So it's particularly amusing when George Bush stands up in front of the U.N. and makes claims about the sanctity of
UN resolution. But of course, the UN of the United States blocked,
sometimes without any recognition of
unanimous world consensus on many times from Cuba about its own crimes.
These are considered acceptable because the victims are usually citizens of the
UN violated by its own allies, most notably Israel. So the hypocrisy is pretty clear, and you make the point that many
citizens are treated the same way by other countries.
Such and that's because requires the main information channel for most people is television. Television
media also helps to conceal human rights abuses by portraying them as human rights promotion. Here's an example. By the time President Jimmy Carter left office, he had claimed human rights as the key issue of his foreign policy. However, he approved military aid to brutal regimes in Afghanistan, Indonesia, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Haiti, actually supporting human rights abuses there. But still, the media portrayed Jimmy Carter as a strong human rights advocate, despite his record. Of course, the situation only worsened after his presidency ended.
I think these things are always locked together. We can't think of,
involvement
what's needed to reform
this time,
media.
The media justified U.S.
aggression. We also have to think about what's needed to really reactivate the entire political culture.
In a previous report,
they
showed that many human rights atrocities in Chile were not
revealed
until 30 years later when news reports obtained critical documents and revealed their contents to the public. Most of the American press somehow missed the story. The British news reported this evidence in detail. And regarding the International Criminal Court, the American press uniformly focused on hypothetical conflicts with rogue states, while international press described U.S. objections as a blatant attempt to avoid prosecution, with several articles explicitly
blaming
Secretary of State and
Kissinger for a serious war. Thank you very much, Bob.
Professor Robert Jensen describes a current trend among Americans who have not been happy with this media-directed propaganda campaign.
During the aftermath of September 11th, a lot of people started reading the British press online, and of course those of us lucky enough to have internet access can do this quite easily. So for instance, the Guardian newspaper in London, which has a very good website, was a real important source of information for a lot of us after September 11th. People can now easily go on to the BBC website and not only read text, but actually see video clips and such things. I know a lot of people in the United States who trust the BBC much more than they trust the American networks or cable news channels. And I think we're seeing more and more of this. Everybody, you know, develops their own particular media that they trust from abroad. But I do see more and more Americans, at least Americans who have access to this kind of technology, going abroad.
In the cases we just talked about, British reports exposed American problems. However, as we mentioned earlier, Britain itself used propaganda to publicize atrocities by Germans in Belgium. One of their two major complaints was that Germany did not treat Belgian resistors as an army, and therefore violated international laws by mistreating them. Britain successfully used this human rights propaganda to entice the US to enter World War I. Hypocritically, the U.S. performed the same violations when they invaded Afghanistan and did not grant Afghan resistors their rights as prisoners of war. Furthermore, the media helped to mask these human rights violations as they granted military officials full public access to convince people that their armed opponents fell into a legally ambiguous area that exempted the U.S. from protecting them under international law. Of course, anyone detained in any armed conflict is explicitly protected by the Geneva Convention, but the U.S. propaganda machine kept most of the American public on the side of the government despite the facts. Not only was the exactly opposite propaganda used successfully to promote the exactly opposite position during World War I, but the Geneva Convention was not even in effect then. The Afghan position was an even bigger propaganda job, but worked even better. But is there hope for the media? Consider this. In the 1950s, Senator Joseph McCarthy was considered a patriotic elected official for exposing communists. Then, a newsman, the legendary Edward R. Murrow, exposed McCarthy's scheme to gain political contributions at the expense of his innocent victims. At first, Murrow's reports were censored, but eventually were accepted as undeniable fact. Later, another legendary newsman, Walter Cronkite, was the first to widely publicize U.S. failures in Vietnam. President Lyndon Johnson tried to promote American military victories, but had to admit that independent news reports caused the government to lose public support. As another example, news journalists Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward exposed espionage and sabotage by top White House aides, leading to the resignation of President Richard Nixon. In all of these cases, the problems were widely known, but were not accepted until reporters, in effect, legitimized them. So the media has great potential to educate the public about the true nature of corporations, government, and popular public figures. But the media has to avoid the pressures working against them first. For example, all of these scandals were widely reported, but there are only a few examples of the total throughout U.S. political history. The U.S. government responded to these events by treating them as isolated exceptions to its otherwise ethical functioning. Every government or large corporation realizes that they must control the media to win public support. Positive public opinion allows them to operate without heavy scrutiny. But Robert Jensen explains that the public can use their influence to demand better reporting.
Until the American public is more politicized, and here I think the solution is not just reform journalism, although I think journalism reform movements are important, it's also to re-energize people as political agents, as citizens who have a role in a democracy, right? Because it's a re-politicized American public that will put pressure on media to improve the coverage and the content.
Thanks to Robert Jensen, Carlos Salinas, and Rebecca Flint. The comment on Columbia was provided by Daniel Brito. Also special thanks to Halima Collingwood and supporting material provided by Tom Rosensteel. This is Human Rights Radio. I'm Jesse Bangu.